So, Mark, welcome back.
Thanks, Wayne.
Last time we had a chat and we're having a few drinks. We're talking about people that we wish we could have stepped in their shoes for a certain time. And we didn't get to finish that conversation. No. So I was going to ask you now, we're on a podcast, what would be the person you would step into the shoes of that's not related to you, dead or alive, and why and when?
I think I would, because I'm an electrician as well as a comedian, as you know. I think I'd love to step into the, more into the mind almost of Nikola Tesla.
I knew you were going
to
say
that. You knew that because just to know what it would be like to be that smart, you know, yeah. Honestly, and just his mind was a different thing. You know, those people in history, you know, Socrates, Galileo, you know, those people who think outside the box, ahead of their time, think about things that we can only imagine. You know, in today's age, what would Tesla have been with today's technology, you know, already having a base of that knowledge? How smart would he have been? You know, it's, I think he would be the one, yeah.
When,
I think.
Because he ended up feeding pigeons at the top of his
life. Yeah, maybe not at the end of his life. It wasn't such a good time for him. But I think maybe before, you know, going to when he went to university and, you know, he started. And then when he apprenticed under Edison, you know, and really coming into his own then, coming up with three-phase power and seeing the building of the dam and the hydroelectric plant at Niagara Falls and lighting up the World's Fair. You know, that stuff had to be magical. Doing his side, you know, as such, those sideshows almost where, you know, look at this new electrical power, you know, would have been great. You know, he was a bit of a showman, I think, as well.
Yeah, he was Serbian, wasn't he?
Yes, Serbian, yeah.
They said that there was something unusual when he was born. Did you read about that? His mother went through this horrible labor, and it was during a massive storm. During that time,
yeah, big electrical storm,
storm. Well, yeah, imagine.
How about it?
But you know, radar.
Yep, radar.
X-ray,
pretty much the basis of Wi-Fi.
Wi-Fi.
The three-phase motor, which without it, we'd have nothing right now. It's transmission of alternating current, pretty much alternating current. Full stop.
It's extraordinary when you look at someone's life like that to find out how much impact they had, but the credit they deserved, they weren't given.
You know what? Most people come up with an invention and then they go about selling that invention or selling that technological advance for the rest of their lives. Whereas when he would come up with something like three-phase power, he'd sell the idea, Westinghouse, and move on to the next thing. He wasn't there for the plaudits or the, I mean, I think he did appreciate the plaudits. He didn't really get the ones he should have at some points, but yeah. He wasn't interested in monetizing his inventions. He was interested in moving on to the next invention. What's next?
Yeah.
They talk about, you know, the free energy people talk about, could he, you know, he was trying to work on pulling energy from the sky and all this, you know, he was always on to the next idea. What's next?
You wonder, you know, because all his blueprints were seized by the CIA. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that.
When he died, one of his children couldn't get to the room. When she got to the room, the CIA were there. They had already confiscated all the blueprints of Nikola Tesla. Apparently, Thomas Edison, they were in competition for a while.
Oh, absolutely. Their whole lives.
And, you know, he tried to discredit Tesla by, you know, electrocuting an elephant.
Yeah, Edison's killing an elephant. Yeah.
You just think what goes through the mind of a person like that, because his power was free.
Yeah, exactly. You know,
that's why Westinghouse didn't invest, am I right? Because obviously he was a businessman. He wanted to make money.
They did. They wanted the patents. It was the patents that was you know, worth all the money to these things. And he didn't get, basically, they talk about Marconi invented the radio.
The Italian, yeah.
The Italian, but not really. It was based off Tesla's work.
Yeah.
That the grounding of that patent was Tesla's invention. Whereas he didn't come up directly with the radio. He laid all the foundation for Marconi to put it together.
He was credited with that later on.
Later on.
I remember something coming up about that where they said it was better late than ever, but yeah. He was credited similar for with, the work of that.
Similar with Bell, Alexander Graham Bell, and the telephone. You know, there's been people always, he invented the telephone. There's argument about that as well. Did he, or did he just, you know, kind of patent something that was already there that someone else had worked on and, you know, created?
What do you think the power of the future would be?
The power source? We have to go renewable if we're going to survive. Mm. We have to go renewable. Wave, wind, we have to harness what's already there, whether it be wave, wind, solar. We can't go digging dirt out of the ground and, you know, destroying the environment to
you would think
move forward. Well, no, not in Australia, apparently. It's fine. We need jobs. Let's build a mine. You know, it's not a sustainable.
Do you know, my wife works for a mining company, but she works in the technology end. And she went to the United States and they had a lecture. NASA was there. And NASA was producing these drones, underground drones for Mars.
Wow.
So the technology, obviously, you know, the technology can be used here.
Yeah.
So that's why they went. They wanted to find out what are these drones they're going to use on another planet, and can we have those unmanned drones here to save men going down and doing all that? Already the trucks are all automated.
The trucks is crazy. I worked up in the mines for a number of years.
You did?
And seeing these D10 giant dump trucks, I mean giant, if I'm standing beside the wheel, I'm not even halfway up the up the side of it. And they're just driving around by themselves.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Yeah. They stop on a 20-cent piece. You know, they're accurate. Yeah. They don't need brakes. They're just driving around by themselves.
Yeah.
Doing their own thing.
And the control room's here.
They use military grade GPS to actually, you know, locate where they are and make sure they're going into the right place and drop and unloading it. It's phenomenal to watch. And that's the big push now for electricians is a lot of these companies are hiring electricians to do the work, do the maintenance work, because they need that automation, electronics, electrical experience to be able to maintain them. So whereas a truck driver may lose his job, a maintainer will get a job. So, you know, there is a lot of replacing with automation, but
they're being relocated or
it's the same.
Educated in another area. We have to.
It's just progress. I mean, it's the same with the printing press, you know. Like the guys used to slip the numbers and the name and the letters into the printing press. Those guys took the jobs from the guys who used to sit there and hand write out Bibles. It's just progress. We just move.
That changed everything. Yeah. I think I was looking at the history of Martin Luther.
Oh, interesting.
And how he went against the church when no one was going against the church. But the way he got such a big following was the printing press had just been invented.
Yeah.
And he used that for his propaganda.
Yeah.
And then nailed it on the door of the church.
The door of the church in 1600s.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Not a great time to go against the church either. You know, he was a pretty brave guy.
I know. You either got to be mad or a genius. And I think a lot of these people we're talking about, they're verging on that razor edge.
Talked about before, there's that madness and genius. It's a
what
very
was it? Ted Kaczynski.
Line. Ted Kaczynski, Wayne's favorite serial killer.
We were comparing Ted Kaczynski to some of the other geniuses at that time.
Yeah.
But look at Galileo. He was prosecuted by the church, you know.
The earth is the earth doesn't rotate, or the sun doesn't rotate around the earth. It's the other way around.
What a time to sort of...
I mean, that's got to be one of the greatest eras, around the whole Renaissance era as well, of just evolution.
Well, you think Da Vinci and Michelangelo didn't live that far apart, and they were in the same time.
Yeah.
Like two of the greatest were living around the same area at the same time. Like, when do you get that?
And they had patronage, which is a big thing. Patrons. So those guys could work unencumbered by the needing to earn a living.
Well, they were getting paid pretty well by the church.
Yeah, by the church to do the artwork. But they also had just rich, wealthy patrons who would, you know, pay them to do their work. You know, maybe take a painting of them or an invention. There was a lot of that back then, which made having that reverence for art gave those guys the ability to do that.
What annoys me is when they credit the work to a higher religious cause. So they sort of said that the reason why the work is so beautiful is because it was influenced by God.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was just, it's just not right. Oh. Because, I mean, you got to look at who was paying at the time. I mean, if you had a science institution paying Michelangelo to do the work for them, can you imagine what he would have come up with, you know? Just like, I love looking at that. I love looking at those times. I love history.
Oh, yes.
But the amount of people that have changed the way we live today back then for something they would have done. What do you think Tesla had in mind? What do you think he would have done if he was... he was still alive, but yet what do you think his visions were on some of the blueprints that were confiscated by the CIA?
It's hard to say. I don't think the free energy, I think that's a bit of a misnomer. People think that we'd be able to, you know, that he had something that was going to be free power and we could just harness it and you couldn't meter it. And that way it would be free to everyone. But it's interesting, I was listening to Bob Lazar, the UFO guy.
But he
was talking about how, and he's right, you know, if we had electrical energy that we were pulling into our house, it would fry chips and, you know, fry transistors and electronics wouldn't work. So we could be actually hindered by it more than, which is a really interesting theory. It got me thinking about it. So like if we had went with DC instead of AC, direct current power instead of alternating current, we would have had big transformers on the end of every street and, you know, a different world. And the same way, if we had got that free energy, it mightn't have worked out as well for us as it has using the alternating current.
Could be. You never
know. So you don't know. You know, it's interesting. I have no idea where it would be.
Have you heard much about this, you know, the protests that are happening now with 5G?
Not the protests, but I know.
Yeah, those protests. People don't want it.
Wow.
Because of they just don't know what it's going to do, you know, to people.
It's going to give us faster internet than we have right now in Australia. I'll tell you that for free.
It could give us four ears as well.
4 ears,
you know.
I'll have 5G and 4 ears. I'd happily grow 2 extra ears to have some quicker internet speeds than I get in my broadband NBN in.
NBN was a joke.
Well, it doesn't even. It's slower. No, it's slower than my old 2-wire connection.
No.
I used to get, well, relatively speaking, if I'm watching Netflix, I will get a wheel or, you know, a buffering spin on Netflix or Stan.
Yeah.
More regularly than I did when I had 2-wire internet.
Yeah. What is with that?
You know, my stepson, he plays a lot of those games, the League of Legends and stuff like that. Mm. He complains about it nonstop. He can't play his games anymore. He gets too much lag and can't play his games. He knows all about it. But he curses and basically gives up on playing his online gaming now, whereas he used to be able to play no problem with the 2-wire. It's true. Which is crazy.
I think it's true. When I upload videos, I hotspot from my phone, use 4G.
Exactly.
It's just so quicker, much faster.
Yeah.
And you just think, well, you know, when you hear of people going to South Korea and then coming back and they're just like, we're in the stone age.
Nigeria
when it comes to
has better that's forefront. Yeah, it's got some crazy good internet.
That's ridiculous.
That's why there's so many princes over there sending out emails. They can send out 1,000 emails a minute because they've got good internet.
Everyone complains about Australia with our internet speeds.
It's terrible. It's terrible. Absolutely terrible.
It's funny because that's your industry.
Yeah.
So when you say Nikola Tesla, I was like, okay.
Can't help it.
Can't you be the next one, Mark?
I'm not smart enough.
Through an electrical storm, you come out with this.
Oh, like, yeah.
Boom.
If I have some sort of Marvel moment, yeah, maybe get it. I've had enough shocks and they have not helped me whatsoever.
Hey, Bob Lazar, did you hear him talking about the... that device, the orb that was producing gravity.
Yeah.
Was it? It was gravity, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was like
a gravity
magnetic
drive as such. He said, yes.
I don't know. I believed him. He didn't look like, you can sort of tell when someone's sort of, you know, I don't know.
I'm fully on board with him. Fully on board with him. I, like, I always believed in some ways I've loved alien conspiracies and alien UFOs my whole life, but...
But that could be entertaining.
And I kind of probably put it away for years, not really thinking about it. But now, just after watching that, I'm fully on board. That brings me on to my question for you, Wayne.
What?
Aliens, have they been here in the past?
Oh, definitely.
Definitely? Because you've been to Egypt, right? Mm. And I know you're a big historical buff and you know so much about ancient Egypt. And there's always been talk of, you know, were they were so advanced for their time. Was there an external influence to that? What do you reckon?
No. I don't think a lot of people put the pyramids and, you know, the structures in Egypt, especially the pyramids. No one really knows. They can't say for sure how it was built or, more importantly, why. So I just think that there was an intelligent race here on Earth before the Ice Age. I think our ancestors created the pyramids. I think they built the pyramids. I just don't think we give them enough credit. You know, there's something going around called historical amnesia. Yeah. And I believe that we are a little bit arrogant today because we went the way of the microchip and, you know, we are the most advanced species ever. I don't think so. I think there was another advanced species. They were just advanced in a different way. We went the way of the microchip. They went through something completely different.
Like a lost history almost, or a lost collective intelligence, you know, caused by climatical catastrophic weather events or, you know, solar flares or, you know, that would have destroyed down to our, put us back, you know, like so all the advances they'd made.
It's, and you know, the history.
I'm inclined to believe or to agree with you, actually. I just posed that out there for, you know,
even
wrong,
people, but, people that are there. Like I met the security guard in the king's chamber and it's his job just to stand there. And so people don't get up to any mischief.
Yeah.
And we were there for a while and we got alone time in there and he came up to us and I'm just studying the walls in there. They look like these granite pieces were laser cut.
Wow.
And he said that each beam that went across the roof, there were seven of them. Each of those beams weigh the equivalent of 27 SUVs. Each beam. And there's seven of them on the top. And each one looks like they've been laser cut. You just can't explain it. And he turned around. He had his own interesting theory. He said it was a futuristic, like, medical center. So he said people would go there, specifically the pharaohs and the upper echelon of the Egyptian society. And they would go there and they would use that as a healing chamber. I thought that was really interesting to hear.
But they had so many things that even just little things, they pharaohs, wives, queens would have a nail artist.
Yeah.
You know, someone who painted their nails, you know, which I found hilarious. Yeah. My partner is a nail tech, but it's an old trade, you know, but right back to then they were, you know, and they were such an incredible race of people that was a juggernaut for the era they were
3,000 years. The empire lasted.
Yeah.
The longest empire
That's
in the world.
Incredible.
But I did hear it was 3,000 years, but yet they didn't advance within those 3,000 years. Like the temples they built at the beginning were similar to the temples at the end.
Or better, yeah.
Very similar. But when you look at other civilizations such as the Greeks, within 100 years, these, you know, they looked at what they had, even though it worked. They then progressed further.
Yeah.
They advanced further. Not to take anything away from the Egyptians, because I think they were the foundations of who we are today.
Nah, fuck them, lazy bastards. Wouldn't even get, you know, just build one pyramid and God, I'll do. It's done. Hey?
And the fact that there's pyramids all over the place.
Oh, and they stretch right down past Egypt as well. I watched some interesting stuff on the mounds and pyramids that aren't even uncovered yet. Working their way south from into, look at my map, into the map. Sudan, which is handy.
Yeah.
In Sudan, there's pyramids.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of argument over them right now, over where they belong to and annexing and, you know, the start of the, because if you go right to the start of the River Nile, there's actually a bit of argument of where the start of the River Nile is because it's been in Egypt. They've almost cut off where it goes from Sudan. So the Nile really starts in Sudan.
Yeah.
And there are some ancient pyramids in Sudan at the start of the Nile.
Yeah.
And which is, you know, so interesting, you know, that it's because obviously that's such an important part of Egyptology is the Nile.
Yeah.
And yeah, if you go right to the start of it, there's some pyramids and stuff.
I was having massive discussions with the Egyptologist that was taking us around. And we would dispute over a lot of things, but it was great because we would both listen, and things that just didn't add up to me. Like I don't believe that Tutankhamun's tomb was built for him and the things that were in there.
That makes sense.
I believe it was Nefertiti's because even the chair that was there, his father was Akhenaten, the heretic pharaoh, and they literally wiped him from existence when he died. He got rid of all the gods, took everyone out to, you know, in the middle of the desert, built this city 8 miles long, 3 miles wide. It was an incredible feat. But when he died, everyone just went enough and they just went back. So just to preserve the power, you know, Tutankhamun said no more. There's not one god. It's not a sun god anymore. They took it back to the old gods. But yet the chair they discovered in his tomb was the sun. You see the sun god in there. And Akhenaten was married to Nefertiti. I hope I got that right. I'm going to get crucified.
Someone's going to hammer you on Wikipedia.
Yeah. But that's one. The other one is the pyramid, the Great Pyramid.
Yeah.
Honestly, when you go there and you're walking on the inside, somebody once said this theory. They said that they wouldn't want to be around when it was working. In other words, it was this machine. Yeah. But they say it was a tomb. No hieroglyphics anywhere. Now, if you go to the Valley of the Kings, there's just hieroglyphs of the stories that king everywhere.
That would blow everyone's mind if there's no hieroglyphics in the Great Tomb.
No tomb.
Because that's what everyone assumes is going to be all over the wall if you've never been there, you know?
Yeah, the largest building construction in the history of the world at that point, and there's no hieroglyphs on the story of building that. It was for Khufu. Pharaoh Khufu, and he's got the smallest statue in the world. It's a chess piece. That's the only statue of Khufu, and he's responsible for the Great Pyramid. I just don't buy it.
The Great Pyramid at Giza was the highest building in the world until the Eiffel Tower.
I know.
Only 5,000 years it took us to build something bigger than the Great Pyramid at Giza.
They say it took 20 years and 100,000, I don't know how many thousand men. But even then,
that's not even that long. Well, I've been on building sites for 4 or 5 years, and like nothing as impressive as the pyramids.
I know. It took them how long to build the Freedom Tower, and America wanted that.
Yeah,
you know, when the World Trade Center built the Freedom Tower,
the Bell Tower in Perth took years, and it wasn't even ready for the millennium.
And they weren't slaves that built it. They found found work quarters all on the plateau, and they had to be skilled. They had to be skilled.
Skills, not the word. The skills that they possessed in engineering, in stonework, in masonry, organization, just organizationally, logistics to get the stones there. Still don't know where they came from, how far they traveled.
Yeah, and they travel. A lot of people say they came up by the Nile. They actually lifted it on the boats, but they've tried that. It's getting them off the boat.
Yeah.
And then apparently to get them on that incline to lift, when you see the size of these things, and you got to remember the pyramids were shining white.
Wow.
With a gold apex. So they didn't look like the pyramids now.
No, that's right. They were encased almost, the stones, weren't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was gleaming white with a gold apex. And you're going back, they say it was 4,500 years old. So it's the old kingdom.
Yeah.
But when you go, all the Egyptologists, they actually look at the step pyramid of Djoser, because that was the first pyramid.
Yes.
And this guy called, he was like the Da Vinci of the time, Imhotep. He was praised. He's even got his own museum.
Wow.
He was like the Da Vinci Nikola Tesla.
Yeah, I know of him, yeah.
And you're going through there, so you find a lot of the archaeologists, a lot of the Egyptologists looking at the Step Pyramid. And a funny story, we were walking through there and my wife looks down and she sees the tip of this clay pot in the sand. She picks it up and the guy goes, oh, yeah, that's from the Romans. And we looked and we said, what? And he goes, let me have a look. And he looks at this clay rim.
Wow.
And he goes, because it hasn't got inscriptions or it's not painted, it's worthless.
It's worthless.
And, you know, like an idiot, we didn't take it. We should have taken it. But because it was our first day, we actually put it back.
Yeah.
But he said that whenever you dig in Egypt, this is a shout out to Hamada. You know, he was a legend that took us around.
Yeah.
He said, whenever you dig in Egypt, you need to get a license. You need to get an approval from the antiquities building board.
Yeah,
it's
a huge.
They bring people out. I'm talking about if you put a shovel in your back garden, you're not allowed. You're not allowed to dig anywhere because whenever you dig, you find stuff.
Wow.
So you imagine over 3,000 years, there were civilizations that were there. And he said that whenever you dig in Egypt, you know, you're going to find something.
Yeah.
I mean, we were walking and kicked over a Roman clay pot. I mean, how crazy is that? You know?
It boggles the mind, doesn't it? You know, how many people have walked on that land before?
Yeah.
You know, before the 40s and the 50s, or before that as well. You know, when they started to uncover a lot of these great Egyptian sites.
Yeah.
But they've always, it's Cairo. People have always gathered there. Mm. There's always been civilization there. And then they talk about the Sphinx Plateau being much older than that.
Yeah.
Which is geologically, they believe it couldn't have been
Robert Schock. Robert Schock said he was the first guy to come out and say there was water corrosion around the side. And then he dated it back because he's a geologist. He's, you know, Egyptology is more with anthropology than a science. And he said he was a geologist. But, you know, when you bring up something like that and you've got to rewrite history, no one's going to you're not going to be the popular guy in the room.
No, not when you've spent your whole life doing doctorates on this stuff. And they hate to be proven wrong, don't they? A lot of people hate to be proven wrong.
I know. But
to accept new theories, you get that blindness of, no, this is the way we're going, tunnel vision. This is our story. If you mess up that story, and that's not the way science is supposed to work.
That's
it's supposed to be
testing.
Everything is, nothing is proven. It's just the latest, but we'll see.
But Mark, you got to go there.
Yeah, you always make me want to go there. I have to, yeah.
I think you've got to see that with your own eyes. You can see it on postcards and on the internet.
It doesn't
do it justice. You know, and the tour guides always laugh because we're driving through the streets and, you know, coming back from the airport and we suddenly see these apexes towering over these buildings. And, you know, and you always think, like, how long has this these structures been there? When I was sitting, I had a free day, I was sitting on the pyramid reading with my headphones on. And, you know, what went constantly through my mind is, imagine the guy who cut this stone. Imagine them laying this stone 4,000 years ago, 4,500 years ago, when it was. And here I am so many years later sitting on this stone,
on the same stone.
Just blows my mind when I think of that.
You know? How much it could have taken just to get there.
Yeah.
You know,
you said Nikola Tesla.
Mm. Who would you?
Well, there's a lot, but... at that moment, I know Howard Carter when he discovered Tutankhamun's.
Yeah.
And he looked through the hole and they asked him, what is he looking at? And he said, I see beautiful things. It was like, I see beautiful things or I see wonderful things.
Yeah.
But just to know that was a tomb that none of the grave robbers got to.
Yeah.
And yet they found it. Everything in there. Like very rarely these days you'll find tombs that haven't been looted.
Yeah.
Because they were looted from back in the day. And at first, you know, I'd be going, those bastards. But when you realize why they looted, because the pharaohs, you know, they weren't as rich as they once were when Amenhotep III and Ramses II. After that, it went, you know, they started... The money wasn't there and there were other more powerful nations coming up.
Yeah.
But yet the pharaohs still requested what they needed. Like, you know, they still thought they had the wealth of Ramses II, and people were starving. So you can imagine these people that were building these tombs. After the pharaoh is buried,
they knew where it was.
If you're not going to pay us when you're alive,
we'll get it one way.
And so the priests actually got the bodies, the mummies, and took it away, and they preserved that. And that was another moment for me, is we had a look at all the stuff in Egypt, you know, and the temples is what blew us away more than the pyramids.
Yep.
The temples were outstanding. It was an extraordinary experience. Because every wall was covered with stories. And you're walking through these temples and you sort of realize, you know, there's a similar layout to them. They have the outer the inner sanctuary, and then where the public came, they weren't allowed where the high priests were. Yeah. And, you know, the religions also took all the money, just like it is today. So the high priests would would see all these rooms that were, you know, the offerings would be kept in. Yeah, it blew my mind when I was there, and I forget where I was going.
But which historical figure would you like to be? It would be.
Well, at that moment.
At that moment.
I think that would be cool. That would probably be the closest to Indiana Jones I'll ever get.
Yeah, that you'd ever get. Yeah, you know? Yeah, I can see that. Yeah, I'm not surprised by that either.
When I was traveling, I always was joking with my family, and I said, you know what? Knowing my luck, I'm going to fall through a sand hole and I'm going to fall through 4,000 years of history in somebody's like living room.
Yeah.
And everyone would laugh, but my family knows how jaggy I am.
That you would jag it?
Yeah. And they were like, we'll laugh, but you know, what's the bet? Something. Because my goal, I had two things. I've always joked with my family.
Yeah.
I'm going to discover the lost tomb of Alexander the Great. And the Ark of the Covenant.
Oh, yeah. Just some small goals you've set for yourself.
Yeah. But for me, it blows me away how no one has discovered Alexander's tomb. You've got to remember, this guy was king around Europe.
The greatest conqueror in the history of the world, almost.
For the time.
Yeah.
I mean, he was 20 when he became king. He was 32 when he died, and he'd conquered most of the Hellenistic period was his. King of Europe, like he was king of Greece and became the king there. King of Persia. Now Persia was the largest empire. Then he went through Egypt and he became pharaoh. Did you know Alexander the Great was pharaoh?
No, I did not.
Well, you see him in hieroglyphs there. Well,
man was kicking ass.
Well, you got to remember Cleopatra, right down the end of the Egyptian, towards the end of the Egyptian empire, she was Greek. She was Macedonian. She was from the Ptolemy dynasty, and the Ptolemies came from one of the generals of Alexander the Great, who was a Ptolemy. So a lot of that period was Macedonian and Greek.
Yeah.
And that was because of Alexander. And so I was always walking through, and I always said to my Egyptologist, you know, like, I'm going to discover Alexander. We had this big discussion. There was a group of us, and I don't believe he is in Egypt. They had records that his body was there because a lot of the Roman emperors and generals used to go pay homage to Alexander's body. Julius Caesar cried at the age of 32 because he said, I've accomplished nothing compared to my hero, Alexander the Great. Yeah. So, but I don't believe his body was there. I don't believe he died in
Where
Babylon.
Where is it, Wayne? Well, tell us now.
Well, I can tell you. Oh, I can tell you where I believe it was. No, I won't.
You can tell me off air, Wayne. Tell me off
air. I'm going back.
I'm coming with you.
And I have my own theory. Like, I traced it back through the history and where he died. He died in Babylon, probably people say of typhoid fever. The worst thing he did when he was on his deathbed is all his generals wanted to know who was going to be his successor. And just before he died, he put up his hand and he said, to the strongest. And it's the worst thing because his whole empire collapsed after that.
You know, just the power struggle and the vacuum. And
one of the greatest conquerors, the leaders of our time. And we've discovered his father's tomb. Out of all the treasures I've seen and the museums, the best museum, now I've been to the Cairo Museum, the oldest museum in the world. A lot of people say it's the Louvre, but the Louvre was built as a palace first. It wasn't a museum. It then became a museum after. But the Cairo Museum is the oldest. The tomb of Philip II. Philip II was the guy who united Greece. His tomb was outstanding because they built the museum around the tomb. And the tomb was underneath this massive hill. So you had to, they built this museum. So you're walking through all these old rocks and then you're seeing these glass cases of Philip's shield and his and it's all in gold and his crown, his leaves. I might put the image over the video now. Yeah. You're not allowed to take pictures, but you know.
Someone might have snuck some.
I had some really cool ones. Well, we were there alone, literally alone.
Oh, wow.
And for the time we went. And Alexander commissioned the building of his father's tomb. And his father was assassinated by a bodyguard. I was sitting on the stairs that went down to where the entrance of the tomb, and no one else was there. And I just sat there thinking, God, just unbelievable.
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
But that his father was big and they haven't found the greatest conqueror. You know, they haven't found Alexander's tomb.
Wow.
And I believe his body was cremated because that's what the Greeks did.
Yep.
You know, to pass into the underworld. And it was a heavy belief then. You had to be cremated. You had to have the coins on your eyes to pay the boatman.
Pay the ferryman. Karen. Yeah. Don't pay the ferryman.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so, interesting. I would love to be a time traveler.
Yeah, that'll be good.
But be
backwards.
Invisible.
Yeah.
I don't want to be visible going back like I am now. Back
you don't
then.
Want Marty McFly it?
Yeah.
No. I want to be back there, you know.
Yeah.
Just singing Beatles songs like in the film yesterday. That's just a tune I came up with.
You've got all the guys.
E is equal to MC squared.
Yeah. E is equal. Actually.
What does that mean?
What would you steal from the past? You said a formula.
Yeah. Oh, what would I steal if I went back?
Yeah.
I don't know what I'd steal.
Who would you assassinate?
Oh, who would I? Okay, that's a good one.
And don't say Hitler.
No. Toto Scarlatti. Toto Scarlatti scored a goal for Italy against Ireland in the 1990 World Cup. So we could just get rid of him. Ireland win semi-final, beat West Germany in the final, champions of the world.
And what year was that?
1990. Yeah. No, I probably wouldn't murder Toto.
Poor
Toto
guy.
Scarlatti. Maybe just break his leg.
I know. That's something I would, when you watch Trainspotting, that's exactly what was said. You know, things like that were said in the movie.
<Trainspotting. laughs> Was it?
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. I don't know who I'd kill.
No, yeah. It's hard to say.
Probably Stalin.
Oh, he was pretty bad. Yeah, but then also Hitler might have won the war.
Yeah, but would we
see? You don't know what effects it's gonna have, you know.
It bugs me. Why you think you would have learned your lesson with the Russian winter? You know, Napoleon went through the same thing.
Yeah.
Why didn't he wait? Like, if he had focused all his forces to continue bombarding the United Kingdom, like England.
Oh, well, Dunkirk was the biggest mistake of the whole lot, wasn't it? He had them all sitting there, the whole British fleet. Sitting in Dunkirk, ready to be just bombed to smithereens, and you let them all go. They ended up getting out.
There was these massive blunders. And you think if he had waited for the winter to be over, he would have won that war against Russia, I think. And if he had kept on bombing England, they couldn't, you know, I know the Luftwaffe, you know, suffered with the British in the air. The British did really well, but I don't know, they could have just kept bombing England to those smithereens. But then they decided to attack east, spread their forces out, I don't know.
Yeah.
If
only, Wayne.
If only. Yeah. I know.
We are not Nazi sympathizers.
No. We do, you know, not that. But I love to always think, what if?
Yeah, that's true.
If I was in the room, I was going to ask you if – you could be in the room at one particular moment of what we're talking about now. Can you imagine being in the bunker when the Allies were surrounding Berlin and the Russians were coming in, and being in the bunker with his generals and hearing, you know, this delusional,
madman,
garrulous man,
yeah,
talking about still winning the war. But then his turning point to suddenly realizing before, you know, he takes the revolver, that all that doctrine that he'd been preaching for years and the thousand-year Reich that was going to come at it, you know, towards the end after the war was never going to happen.
It's crumbling around him, yeah.
Can you imagine being there at that moment, you know, and just going... Yeah.
Told you so.
What was all that in Nuremberg? Full of shit.
Who knows? Did he go to South America? Possibly. Definitely lots of them did go to South America. Yeah,
there's big German communities
Argentina.
There.
They still speak German in certain places.
Well, when they captured Eichmann.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've seen that document.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
And, you know, that's crazy. That's a great documentary, One Day in September, about the... Olympics, where they had the hostage situation at the Olympics, and how, you know, after that the Israeli Mossad around picking them off one by one.
I thought you were talking about the Germans then.
No, but just being in India. No, sorry, not
Palestinians, isn't it?
Yeah, just not doing the. But yeah, I don't know what other historical moments would you like to be in at. I think I would have liked to be in. I've got that UFO thing on my mind a lot lately is, you know, being one of those meetings, those high level meetings where they sit down and tell, when you become president.
Yeah.
And you sit down and they tell you.
But Mark, I don't
tell you
think
this, they don't tell them. I feel like they don't. But, you know, just being that guy who does know, or being in that room when something like that happens.
Cigarette smoking man.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Right. Have you ever had what you thought might be an encounter with? It could be an extraterrestrial entity.
Mm.
What do they call it? Extraterrestrial biological entity?
Yeah.
EB?
Yeah.
Or a spiritual entity. Have you had anything?
I remember one thing that always sort of opened my mind, blew my mind as a kid. I remember it was, let's say we're talking 1997. I remember for some reasons it being the day the Channel Tunnel was finished, because I'd seen it on the news and then went out that afternoon. And there was this comet going through the sky, real slowly just moving across the sky. We watched it all afternoon and it was before the internet and before mobile phones.
Wow.
And just going, is this going to hit the earth? Imagine this hits the earth, or is this the end, or what, you know, what is this? You know, it was just such a strange sight to see this red glow moving across the sky. And I always remember that just wondering what's going to happen, you know. If this touchdown, would that be,
yeah,
you know, is it an alien? I don't know.
Well, you don't know.
Yeah, I was a dumb kid as well. It was a group of us and we just watched this mesmerized for the evening, just watching this comet.
I'm still a dumb kid looking at it now.
I know, right?
Did they say that fungus, like mushrooms, came from a meteor?
Possibly.
Well, you look at it. It looks different to anything that we have at the moment.
Yeah. Octopus. Squid. I reckon that could be. That's why there was recent talk of that.
Well, they're intelligent.
The other spiritual event, still don't know what fully to make of, was, and it's so cliche, Sam, but I was working in the art center in Fremantle, which is this old limestone building. You know the one? It's a beautiful building. I worked there for months and months and months refurbishing the electrics. I mean, I've been under the floors. There's whole gaps under the floor that as high as this room you can stand up in. You know, there's other parts you have to crawl through. It's almost like catacombs underneath. It's freaky. But there's this one room right down the end of the hall. And I've heard different stories of what it was used for. Apparently used for, because it used to be an asylum and stuff like that to hold, you know, the prisoners and stuff, but it's got a small window that's about 7 inches by 7 inches with bars over it. That's the only window on this door. And it's always closed except for, there used to be switchboards at the back of it closing off the room. When we removed them, you could open that door and now the light would shine the whole way up the corridor, changed the complexion of the building completely. I was working in there late one night and it's a creepy place. It's about 7, 8 o'clock at night. And there's about 5 or 6 of us spread across the building. As I walked out of the room, I could feel this shadowy figure to my left. And I knew there was nobody there. Oh. As in, like, none of the guys were there. And I'm not, I don't believe in ghosts or supernatural, but I could feel something there. And I didn't even look for fear of seeing something in there. But I could, at the corner of my eye, I caught this shadowy figure. And I was, played it off. And I just walked straight down, got to the main reception hall, where the which is the entrance. And all the guys are standing around, five or six of us chatting. End of the day, a book literally flew off the shelf.
Oh.
And yeah, opened up on some creepy, like, anatomical looking page. And we all stood around. This is five tradesmen who have no interest in the supernatural or spiritual or belief in any of that nonsense. But a book flew off a shelf and landed on the floor in front of us.
How do you explain that?
I can't explain it. There's no wind, there's no breeze, there's no nothing, but it happened.
It's,
and I almost hesitate to tell people about it because I don't believe in that nonsense, but it's something that I witnessed myself. And that's the closest thing to a spiritual experience I've encountered.
You know, it's people that don't believe often say, I don't believe, but I hope to hell I never come across one in my life.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's I hear more stories on the spiritual end than the UFO end.
Yeah, true,
people
true.
That have had those
things
happening, that sort of thing happening to people all the time. If there is an afterlife and if there is a God, what do you think and who do you think that is?
I think people have the idea of God as being, well, especially where I come from, God was some mythical figure sitting on a cloud, you know, heaven where you go to when you die and all your parents, so if they've died, and your grandparents and everyone will be there and everything will be great, the utopia. I don't believe in that. I don't believe in any sort of organized religion's version of a God. If there's anything that is godly in this world, I think it's inside of us. I think we all have. I know there's the, we talk about that third eye and heaven. I agree that to some point we definitely have spiritualness in us because we're connected to nature. We're connected to each other. This world is not just, we're not individuals living on a rock. The rock is us as well. We come from the rock, came out of a pool of goo on the rock and evolved to being creatures that can think about what put us here.
So evolution, Darwinism.
Darwinism, absolutely. Completely believe in evolution and Darwinism and how we got to where we are. And I think if we look at that, we can only believe that there's something inside of us that's godly. There's a oneness. I think the Rastafari talk about the I and I and being one. And I believe in that as being the closest thing we have to godliness. It's inside of us. It's that we know what being good and being utopian is. We have animal urges. We can't get by, and there's conflict in the world. I don't believe that we go anywhere. I don't believe that this being of Mark Mahan is going to end up in a place with other dead people. I just don't think it's like that. I think we become part of the universe again by just becoming our bones and our body turning into the soil and growing up a blade of grass through that. That might be what I've become, a blade of grass. I'd be happy with that.
You're from Ireland, so you were brought up probably in a Catholic.
I was brought up very, very Catholic. I'm the only one probably in my family who's not.
What changed? Now,
you know what? I think I really started considering it when my best friend committed suicide when I was 16. That's when I started to really question a lot of the world. And that's what sort of God would allow that to happen. You know, what sort of God would allow kids to be born with terrible illnesses and suffering their whole life, good people suffering for no reason? It'd be a pretty indiscriminate God to do that to people. That really made me question a lot of things in my life. But that was, I completely fell out of religion. I never went to church again. I used to go at least once, well, I used to go a lot every week growing up, but at least Easter and Christmas with my family. I stopped. I refused to go. even Christmas Day, just to make my mother happy, I wouldn't go to church.
To make her happy?
You like, I wouldn't go. Yeah. You know, and that's what it would be. Mm. It would be because I felt like I'm not going to go and pretend for one day a year that I'm like a lot of people in Ireland do. But I'm not going to go for one day a year and subscribe to something I genuinely don't believe in.
It was because your best friend, do you think?
I think so. Well, that was definitely a point in my life, a catalyst
that made
for
you start questioning
things.
Yeah. So who pushed that book over?
I wish we joked because one of the guys had drilled through the wall that day, set off the fire alarm, and the fire brigade had arrived on site. Oh. So the only explanation we had was Des was on the other side of the wall drilling. So I still don't know who pushed that book over. And I don't think it was anything.
But you know when you said you felt something. I did.
That was the one feeling. Time I felt something. I know I had another time near an Indigenous law grounds in up near Roeburn, going by there late at night, 45 degrees outside, and I got this cold chill right across my body, goosebumps coming up and down my arms, and I was like, okay, it wasn't a bad feeling, but it was you need to go feeling,
yeah,
get the fuck out of here kind of feeling, and that was the other time I felt something spiritual.
I'm like you. I don't believe in institutionalized religion anymore.
Yeah.
I was brought up a Catholic and, you know, parts of me still believe, I've read the stories and there's parts of me that believe. But what I don't believe is that if Jesus Christ, if the Nazarene carpenter had to come back, he would ever step foot in that marbleized palace dripping in gold and jewels called the Vatican.
No.
I think it was against everything that he stood for.
He toppled the table in the, well, whether he did or not, the historical Jesus. The stories are written down of him toppling the table of the vendors and sellers in the Temple of Zion because it's...
That's right.
And that was the only time he was seen to be angry in the New Testament.
Yeah.
You know, you've the old God and new God. Old Testament, New Testament.
Yeah.
Jesus in the New Testament he made friends with prostitutes and lepers. Yeah. And
he was a pacifist.
He was a pacifist. He said the hardest thing will be for a rich man to get into heaven will be the same as camel passing through the eye of a needle. And that I believe in terms of the teachings of Jesus were great. And the problem I have with organized religion is people say without religion, we wouldn't have morality.
Of course, that's stupid.
But that's a legitimate argument they like to bring up. People would go around murdering people.
No, they wouldn't.
It comes, you know, from inside you what's right and wrong.
That's right. That's right.
I know if I punch you in the face, it's not. There's a consequence to it.
That means every atheist will be going out there and robbing and you don't do that.
Yeah, I only do that every second weekend. Yeah.
Morality doesn't come from that. But I've got disputes in all of the religions with Judaism, with Islam. You know, I've read all the stories.
Yep.
I don't believe in the story of Abraham. I disagree with being tested, a God that tests you to kill your own son in order to prove your faith. When he had already proven everything by taking everyone he knew out into the desert where people were starving.
Yep.
And he gets asked to test again his faith. Also, I don't believe it was Abraham's sacrifice as much as it was his son that was going to die.
Yeah. I could happily sacrifice you for test my faith. Okay, I'll kill Wayne, no problem.
And then I think there was Jacob that led all the people back to the promised land, got lost, ended up in Egypt where there were slaves for 400 years. There's disputes on that as well.
Mm.
So, for instance, there's not a lot of descriptions out there talking about the slaves of the Israelites in Egypt. The only exodus that happened from Egypt was the people called the Hyksos, and they were ruling Lower Egypt at the time. The pyramids were ruled by a foreign nation, and the Nubians from the south were ruling down the bottom, and Egyptians were relegated to like Memphis. So there wasn't any writing of mass exodus of Israelites. So there's a lot of problems there. And we were always led to believe that Ramses II was the pharaoh during Moses' time.
Yeah.
And that's a lie.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of disputes. And the story of Noah was written in the Sumerian text thousands of years earlier. The Great Flood is through every civilization.
Yeah.
The Greeks Zeus saved two people from a great flood.
There's also a lot of history that's we don't have access to through the Vatican. They have great libraries of history, of writings and stuff from that era that are not publicly available.
Oh, I think
because they contradict probably a lot of what they teach. There's contradictions, right, which there is through the Bible anyway.
Bible of Mary Magdalene.
Yeah, all that stuff. Yeah. You know, there's lots of that. I think I like Reza Aslan, who does who writes some great stuff on the historical Jesus. It's very interesting.
I saw his interview with that idiotic reporter.
Was
it Fox News or CNN?
It's like, how come a Muslim can tell us about Jesus? That's the one that went viral. But his book is phenomenal. I can't remember the name. It's something like Jesus of Nazareth or something. But it's basically the story of the historical Jesus, and from a historical scholar researched his whole life, spent 20 years researching.
I look at that. I look at the history, because the history will tell you a lot. For instance, you know, I grew up in church, and you say the I believe. And realizing that the I believe was written at the Council of Nicaea 325 AD. He rose again on the third day in accordance with the scriptures, was decided at the council at Nicaea that was headed by Constantine with the scholars of Christianity that were there. And they were debating that. They didn't know the actual day of Easter. They were debating it, two sides. So you start to go to the history side, but also the stories in the Old Testament, the stories in the Bible. There's a lot of similarities between the Egyptian mythology, the Greek mythology.
Absolutely. And there's pagan rituals right through. Catholicism and all of them, they've meshed in some of the old stuff as well that was there before to make it more palatable for when they conquered pagan civilizations, they would take in certain parts of their religion and incorporate it to make it more palatable for them to get them to convert.
Of course.
I mean, Ireland was had its own histories, traditions, culture through the Celtics, before ever Christianity became part of Ireland.
Yeah. There is a passage in the Old Testament or the New Testament where, you know, when Christianity came in, they got rid of a lot of the Greek gods at the time. But there is an actual passage where Jesus confronts Hades to release all the souls. Now, the point is if you claim that he confronted Hades, that means it was a Hades. You know,
it's more than one god.
Well, also one of the apostles was Greek. He understood Greek, so he grew up on the stories of Homer. And when you read some of the stories like the Odyssey, he was a son of a carpenter who had a Last Supper, who knew he was going to die the next day. He had to go find the blind prophet Tiresias. And you've got that similarity. You've got similarities between Heracles in the 12 labors, the 12 sufferings, being resurrected, seated at the right hand of his father Zeus in full thing. So you've got so many similarities.
Parallels, yeah.
When I was in Egypt, the birth of Hatshepsut, one of the greatest queens ever, you know, when they talk about women's rights, she was a woman that ruled the world thousands of years ago, 3,000 years. I think it was 3,500 years ago, a woman ruled Egypt for 19 years, expanded its borders by trade, not warfare, and became one of the most successful queens. And her name was Queen Hatshepsut. Her birth was an immaculate conception that they had the gods actually look down on that and said, this is the queen that we need, Ames, and we're going to pick her to be the mother. And the god of wisdom went down and said, you're going to be the mother of a great queen that was going to come. You know,
that's a great story to get out of an unwanted pregnancy, isn't it?
I know. Do you know?
I can't believe it's worked more than once in history.
Yeah, but you often think it's the Mother Mary with the Gabriel that came first. No, it was Hatshepsut before then.
Yeah.
I remember watching this scholar. He debates against religions and things. And I'm going to get this wrong, but he said, is it more right that someone goes against the natural way of the earth and the way history is about having an immaculate conception? Or is it just a promiscuous woman, a promiscuous maid at the time. And you just, that lies, you know?
Yeah.
I've read the stories. I love the stories. And even with Judaism, I don't agree with Abraham, even King David. You know, he was this promiscuous guy that slept around. And he's rated as one of their great kings. And even to marry, to get into with the royal family, he had to kill so many different Philistines. So you're looking at that story. Now, with the prophet Muhammad, he went to a cave called Hira, and apparently he was this illiterate merchant that heard the voice of Gabriel, the same Gabriel.
The same one, yeah.
So already you sort of go,
you see the cross-contamination between them.
Is there a Christian Gabriel? But then again, Jesus is mentioned in the Quran.
Correct, yeah.
More times than the prophet Muhammad. So they look at Christianity. It's not that they don't believe. They actually bring up a lot there.
Yeah.
But do you believe in an illiterate merchant that heard a voice and scribed one of the most beautiful books ever written? You don't know. I don't know.
No.
I can't say. But what I can say is the stories I love.
There's some phenomenal stories in
there. I learned religion from all the religions.
Yeah.
Siddhartha, who ended up was Buddha. He was a prince, you know. Yeah. The stories, because I love stories, and I think the best stories have come from these books. If you want a Lord of the Rings, a Harry Potter, a Titanic, you read the Bible. It's all in there.
All in there.
You know, Sodom and Gomorrah, another story I have disputes with. The punishment, turning people into statues of salt. I mean, they're fantastic
stories. The loaves and the fishes, you know, there's...
Yeah, fantastic stories.
Healing a leper. I love them all as well. Just all those simple stories.
Simple stories. But you do. Yeah, like I'm with you. I don't believe in organized religion. We are Catholics today because Constantine used the symbol of the cross to defeat his arch rival at the time. There were four emperors.
Yeah.
So we are Catholic today because of Constantine.
Yeah.
It's not because of Saul, the apostle, and, you know, the Saul that became the scribe for the Christians.
And they have a bank.
A massive bank. I'm gonna bleed one of my friends into this. He's a manager at Watercorp. And he said that the companies that do the laundry, like these laundry companies, the biggest that do all the hospitals, a lot of the hotels, are owned by the Catholic Church.
Oh, there's a huge history of that.
Is there?
Yeah.
There's no taxes.
In Ireland, there's a horrible thing where unmarried mothers were sent to Magdalen laundries.
Magdalen.
Yeah. And it's some of the most horrendous things happened to these women.
Oh, really?
In the care of the church. They were their children taken from them after they were born. They were beaten, abused, raped under the care of the church.
Yeah.
And the same with the boys in...
What is with that?
I mean, some of the things the Catholic Church has done to Ireland, to the people of Ireland, is horrendous. We all know, same here with the Royal Commission into child sex abuse.
Yeah. But look at the boys' schools.
That's it. That's what all those boys' schools, and people probably don't understand how entrenched it was in Ireland. The only public schools were Catholic schools. So like I went to a Christian Brothers school. Now in Australia, Christian Brothers school is a private college you send your secondary school kids or high school kids off to. In Ireland, the high school is the Catholic school. It's the public school. So I went to a Christian Brothers primary school and a Christian Brothers secondary school. So right up until I had the last brother, which was a Christian brother, who was actually a principal of my primary school, up until about half or a year left to go in primary school, he retired. And he was the last one to retire out. But all the schools were run by the church.
Mm.
You know, it's so entrenched in society. You never would say anything about a priest. A priest was on a pedestal. You could never say anything about a priest.
In a lot of countries.
In a lot of countries,
but still. I can imagine
Ireland was very, very much.
But that wouldn't be now.
No. But there's still, even through all of that, there's still a great reverence for the church.
Is it for the church or is it for the carpenter, the Nazarene carpenter?
I think it's for the Nazarene carpenter. Like, there's people who genuinely believe. When I look at people of faith, I look at my parents, my brother.
Same.
My grandmother. She reminds me of that pure belief in faith, in God. Mm. And she has a beautiful faith in God, but she also knows what the church has done to be absolutely horrendous.
Here's the thing, Mark. If there was a school, like a school here, and I'm not saying if a kid was abused at the school, it's not a Catholic school. It's a school. It's an institution. You wouldn't send your next kid to that school, would you?
No.
You'd send them to a different school.
Yep.
So my whole point there was the same. So if an institution has had that much abuse, well, you wouldn't send your next kids to that institution. It's not school. I'm talking about the religion of the church. Mm.
But I think that the real issue with the Catholic Church is not just the individual evil people who abuse children. It's the response to it. The response to it is to move them to a different school, to allow them to do it to different people again, to other innocent kids.
Joseph Ratzinger was, he relocated quite a few.
Many, many hundreds. And in Ireland, there was hundreds of these priests who moved from place to place to place to abuse more kids. And it's the saddest thing to happen to Ireland in the last 100 years. Of all the stuff that we've had.
Because they're so entrenched.
Of all that horrible, the troubles in Ireland, all that sort of stuff. Nothing has been as damaging, I think, as the church to those people and the victims. One in Four is the organization in Ireland who speak for victims of sexual abuse at the hands of the church and the institutions. And that name comes from one in four kids who attended suffered some form of abuse.
Which is
a shocking figure, isn't it? 25% of people who went to that.
Which proves my point. If the Nazarene carpenter does come back, he's not going to sit inside
there. He's not going near the Vatican.
And I think whenever I'm like you, I don't really go to church anymore. Mm. Do you know, I've got to say this before. You know, the collection they do gets me angry all the time. There was, especially when you know how much money they make, and we're living in Perth. Did you know the Catholic Church own a lot of the land on St. George's Terrace?
I'm not surprised.
I knew that because
I didn't know that. But
I worked for an accounting firm when I was younger, and we used to go get microfish for the land deeds.
The newspaper microfish.
And I would always see, and I asked them, and they said, "Yeah, the church." Because when a colony sets up, the first thing they build is a church.
Yeah.
So the church owns that land.
Yeah, that old Le Mans. That was the bishop's house.
Yeah.
The Anglican bishop's house. It was Le Mans hotel there.
But I think it's a lot of religions, like we're talking about. I think we hear of the Christians, definitely, but
they shouldn't be tax-free. That's the number
they
one.
They
shouldn't be tax-free. 100% tax them.
I was saying this collection that happened in this church, they were passing out FPOS machines.
I've heard of this.
What?
Tap and go for God. Just goes up into the cloud, you see?
Anyway, that was a great podcast. And we'll do this again.
Thanks for having me, Wayne.
But let's not crucify just one religion next time. We'll come back.
Oh, yeah, I can bash them all. I'm here all day.
You can be the bash. I'll be the advocate.
You can pull me back.
Yeah.
I'll bash atheists as well. I'll bash anyone. Thanks very much, Wayne. See you, mate.